All right, let's start the show.
There's a show?
If we run out of stuff, we can just close down early. Get some sleep.
Take a nap.
Yeah.
Do old person stuff.
Yeah, 970. Here we go. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Who's the best show here? Tech Show! Who's the best show here? Tech Show! Good, that's the best one yet.
I am short.
Pizza, pizza.
It's about fucking time someone else is.
You were making a pouillon in the kitchen. Sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the guests, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies, that'll make it bad. For the stream is cool, LFGS.org. And I see channels at LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just it right there, go together, just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 970 of the Linux Link Tech Show. On the show tonight, we have Joe.
Yep, just
there
me.
We go.
That's it.
That's it. Yep.
That's all of us.
What the hell just happened with that audio? Like, it was playing fine before, and now all of a sudden it's just not working.
I don't know. You muted something. Broke something. Some bad cable.
That's what it's like. Is the problem with the audio cable, or is the problem with the system that was playing it?
Or is it the 3.5 millimeter jack? Or the fact that are you using some kind of USB sound system?
It's USB sound card? It is a USB sound card. That was the only one that worked. It worked fine last week.
Okay.
It worked fine when I was testing beforehand.
Well, sometimes they go bad, but usually not.
It's
that
a little thing tech show, and that's fact.
Yeah, listen to it. What is
it starts out well, ass. And it's like a throughput
ain't
issue
no
or something.
Funny duddies, that'll make it bad.
Yeah, where is it?
For the stream, go to DLTS.org.
I think the cable's going.
Linux, like the first few notes Bound sounded good. Show.
Just sit right there, go together, just about to begin.
Alright. All right, to hell with that. We'll see what the outro gives us at the end of the show, whether it's any better. I still haven't gotten this laptop fixed, but this was interesting. I was talking last week how I was having that problem with SED on OS 10, and that it was not allowing me to substitute a greater than 2007 character variable into the document that I was editing. And my ultimate solution was to split the variable or the value, which was essentially, it was just a JSON object, but with all the new lines, it was all one single line with just new line characters in there instead of it spread across multiple lines. So I split that in half, put it on two separate lines, and then joined those two lines together. And tested it 15 different ways and ran my script over and over and over again, and it worked, like repeatedly testing. And then came the next day where I found somebody who needed to get this all set up for themselves because they just received a new laptop or a replacement laptop. Also happens to be my manager that I report to. And I'm walking him through this, and things are going pretty good. One of the other hurdles that we have with this that makes it almost impossible to have, like, to easily do this with the scripts, because theoretically the scripts should be really easy to run. They say, you know, they make sure that if need be, you're connected to the VPN and that you're logged into Vault. It says that. It asks you where you want to install this. The only caveat is they're just simple bash scripts. So the first time setup way, there are three separate scripts that are run. And that is largely because you could run into issues. And what I mean by that is, so therefore, you need to know, like, you're going to be asked three times where you're, you know, you're installing this when you run each, well, two times where you're installing this, those two scripts. The third script doesn't need to do that because it's just checking your environment for it. So I like Bash, and I prefer Bash, but I think two or three operating, maybe it was Catalina, I don't know. It was Catalina or the one before that. They switched from Bash to ZSH, Z Shell. And I kind of prefer Bash. There are some subtle differences, but I've always been on Bash. So I switched my, you know, made sure I kept my shell Bash. And then everybody else who doesn't really care about that kind of thing is all running ZSH. So, you know, I have to, so that's that thing, you know, we need to have certain variables in the environment that needs to be checked for. And now that I'm thinking about it, I should have checked for another one because that causes problems too. But, and then it just has to write to your Bash RC or ZSH RC, pull them out. So that's the one that doesn't need to know the path. The other two need to know the path, so you just need to put it in twice. So it asks you whether you're connected. You know, it says make sure you're connected to VPN, make sure you're logged into Vault, where you want to install this, and then it does that. And then it says, okay, you know, make sure you're connected to Vault, make sure you're logged in, logged into the VPN. Where did you install this before? What's the path to installation? That stuff. So, what becomes a problem is on there's a handful of prerequisites that have to be set up and installed. VirtualBox, Vagrant, Vault, and Composer for PHP. And that they're
sounds
fairly,
like a pain in the ass.
It's not they, so before you can run these scripts, you got to make sure they're installed. But then there's other problems involved with this. Like, it's like, am I supposed to write the documentation from the perspective that they're never have any of these things installed before? Because, like, I'm like, as soon as I get a new system, that's the first thing I'm doing. I'm setting up Vagrant. I'm setting up VirtualBox. I'm setting up Vault, all the things that I need to have set up before I even think about what I need to use those for, because I've had to use them for Chef in the past. I've had to use them for just our pipeline and all sorts of things. So that becomes a problem. So you get somebody who, like I said, had a new system. They got partial things set up. Now, to make matters a little more complicated, and I'm kind of aware of this, but I can't remember exactly what needs to be done to solve this problem, and it's not very well documented, but on OS 10, if you install VirtualBox, like, there's like a driver component that you need to install or have running, and Vagrant kind of does something a little similar, or maybe it's not Vagrant, it's just all VirtualBox, but you encounter it when you run Vagrant the first time because it's doing stuff with VirtualBox. But there's a permissions issue, and I don't remember how it's, when you have to solve it, like how you can solve it before you need to have it done to use Vagrant. But essentially what it is like you try and run it the first time and it throws an error message and says you don't have permission to do this. So you need to go into the system preferences under the user, the security settings, and then you unlock it. And then it says, hey, this was tried to, you know, this was attempted to happen recently. Do you want to let it do that? And you select yes, and then you're good to go. But I'm not sure what it is that has to be done to preempt that, so you're not getting that error the first time that you attempt to use the product, Vagrant in this case, which is tied to VirtualBox. So it didn't, as far as I know, it didn't happen when I was working through my boss, so I couldn't adequately make sure I address that in the documentation, but I did the best that I could. But sure enough, when it came time to run that specific script to populate the values and pull that service account information out, the JSON object, and write it in, error. Error similar to what I was getting before. And I'm like, wait a minute, what did I screw up here? Did I not take the changes I made and put them into that specific script? Because a lot of the work I was doing was that single script that runs you through the whole thing, it's not split up. But no, it wasn't that case. And that really baffled me, because he was using ZSH, I'm using Bash. So he's using the Z shell, I'm using Bash. I thought maybe that was the case. And so that was the only step right there to just get that information. We had to pull it out of the vault and manually put it in there. But he was thankful that all the other scripts were in place and that the whole thing was relatively easy. Now, we did run into it. This couldn't happen at a worse time, right? He goes to run that script to pull the values out, and he can't pull the values out of the vault because he's getting a permissions issue. And I'm like, are you logged into the vault? He's like, yeah, I'm logged into the vault. And he was logged into the UI, so he could see the values in the UI, but on the command line, he couldn't get the values. I'm like, what's going on? And it's working for me, and it's not working for him, and the script's not working for him, but the script's working for me. I can't figure out what's going on. Why is he getting a 403? This is really weird. So I re-logged back into Vault on the command line, and all of a sudden, it's not working for me anymore. So I'm like, thankfully, it's not the script, right? But why was it just working and all of a sudden stop? So we're playing around with this, and then I ask a third person, can they get into the vault? And they're not having a problem getting into the vault. Everything's working fine for them. So it doesn't make any sense. It's like, are we on the VPN? Are we off the VPN? We have to be on the VPN to be in the vault to get that information. So it was working through the web browser for me, but not in the command line. So I logged out of the web browser, logged back into the web browser, and it wasn't working anymore. So that led me to... So Vault does
background permissions update that happened that didn't get implemented until you logged out and logged back in.
Yeah. So the way what happens with Vault is when you log in, it writes a token, and that token is good for I don't know exactly how long, but it's a couple of days. So his token had expired. Mine was fine. He tried to log in. It was fake, but that was it. They had made a change on the vault side that wouldn't take effect, you're right, until you would re-log in again. So that was annoying. They had to revert that, figure out what that was, and then they had to go revert that change. Which the interesting thing is, back today, the same thing happened on Tuesday when we were back to work, and I was trying to help somebody again doing something, and I'm like, here we go. And I confirmed it that I wasn't able to get in there because I re-logged back in. Same thing happened. I had a third person confirm that. They couldn't get it, so I had to tell them, hey, whatever you did again, knocked us out of Vault. Can you please revert it? But anyway, that was all settled. So the next day, so that was on Thursday. Everything worked fine except for pulling out that service account. We got the Vault thing fixed. Once that was fixed, the rest of it went lickety-split. What it identified to me was there was more of a problem with the prerequisite setup than there was running the script, aside from that hiccup with the
permissions issue.
No, I meant with the pulling the service account. There was a hiccup. Okay. Aside from the hiccup with the service account, pulling that information and substituting it to set issue again, everything was fine. So I went in on Tuesday, and my goal was I'm going to switch to the Z shell and see if I run into the same problems. And I ran my scripts a few times, and I did not have a single problem. So that was like left me kind of baffled. Like, why did this fail for him? But I went and did it, and it didn't fail for me. And then it took a little bit, but then I figured it out. I figured out why it failed for him. And so when I created these scripts, I set the executable bit on those scripts and ran them like ./ the name of the script. But in the documentation, instead of having to walk people through that whole thing of, okay, download the script, set the executable bit on it, and then execute the script, I just said, just run the script, sh script name, right? Because that usually works. And I never tested that. But lo and behold, when I did, again, I ran into that problem with the substitution of that variable. Like, even trying to work with that, I don't know what the problem was. It just wasn't working. So I got fed up with it, right? I got fed up with it, and I'm like, there's got to be a better way to do this. I saw people suggesting to use Perl. So you can use an in-place edit with Perl and do the substitution. And for some reason, I'm not a big Perl guy. And I use Perl maybe once every other year. This was my chance to use it. I could get it working to what I wanted it to, like, where I wanted it to substitute, make that change. I just couldn't figure out how to get it to use the variable. Like, when I said to use the variable, it was empty. It was an empty space. And I tried a bunch of different things. I couldn't figure it out. At that time, I was getting frustrated. So then I'm like, well, the hell with Perl. Let's go with awk. And I put awk in there. And again, I achieved the same success that I was with Perl, with awk. But I then learned that, and I don't use awk that much. I learned that you could pass in the variable. You have to pass in the variable by using the, I think it's the -v switch, and you set the -v and then the name equal to the value or the variable that you want to use, and then it does the substitution inside of awk, and it worked beautifully. It worked perfectly. So I was happy with that. And then I went back and see, now I'm trying to think whether I think what I was doing was I want to say that I couldn't replicate the problem. I couldn't replicate the problem. That's where I might be out of line here. I couldn't replicate the problem in Z shell. So I figured that is what sent me down the path of finding a different way to do it other than sed for just that one. And I got the awk working, and I was happy with that. And then I realized what the problem was that my manager had, is that he ran it through SH. He did SH and a script name. And when I did that, even with the awk in place, for some reason, it wasn't liking that variable that I had in there. It was throwing a weird error again. And at that point, I was like, well, what's the difference between me running it as a dot slash the script name and me running it through SH? And when I switched to using bash, just typing bash in the script name,
that was going
to
be my suggestion.
It worked fine, right? It worked fine. But it wouldn't, it was having an issue with SH. And I know that SH is like a sub section of bash, I guess. It's not a full bash, but it's just enough. So whatever differences are inherent in there, it's the same. It's whatever is in that is causing problems. Switch it to bash, we're good to go. I had somebody else, I created a script that did the exact same thing just to test that part. I had a couple people run it. It ran successfully for them. I was happy. So now I was finished with the documentation.
Like for me, I know that you can use SH, but I almost never do because you do sometimes end up with problems like that. Most specifically, I use it when I am elevating privileges. So if I'm doing running a script, but I'm running it as sudo. So
right.
It's better to do it as bash than to use SH because it's going to work the same way that you expect.
And that is a good point. That is absolutely a good point. And I most of the time, like, yeah, I when I run a script, I've set the executable bit on it and I just run it directly instead of, you know, using SH or bash. But that is good points. That is good points. And from now on, I'm going to do that. Run it in the shell that I want it to run.
I've never been able to, you know, do a sudo dot slash whatever. So I always end up doing a sudo bash whatever.
Yeah, there's another thing too, especially if you're using sudo. That's a good point. But yeah, so there was that. So that was all. That was fun. It was fun. I'm kind of sad it's over.
Yeah. After it's solved, you get that little rush for a minute, and then you're like, what do I do now?
Yeah, well,
the fun is done.
Yeah, all the fun. I have to refine the documentation tomorrow, and then that's done. There's a lot of stuff that I put in there. you know, when I originally wrote the documentation, the person that sent me down the path of doing these scripts was like, the documentation is too long. I just want simple steps, set it up.
I remember that.
And so I did that. And what ended up happening now is the documentation now is like 3 to 4 times the size of what it was before.
But
the biggest difference is there's part one is just, here's a simple way to do this. Just, you know, download these three scripts. This is what you need to run. Part two is, if you've already done this before and you need to just reset it all up again, just download this one script and it'll take you from nothing all the way through to the end.
All of the steps that I would outline for you to do.
Right. And then
one click.
Yeah. Then there's the addendum, which is like, here's the troubleshooting section. Here's you know, what needs to be done for the prerequisites if you don't have them or having trouble. Here's how to do this manually. Here's how to connect to the database in there. Here's all this extra stuff. Like, how do you SSH into the Vagrant box to get in there if you need to? How do you run the plugin setup under Vagrant instead of under OS X? You know, all these things. So, you know, it's every time I like went to somebody else, they're like, well, maybe you should take this out of the repo home main page that described it here and put it into this Confluence document. So we just keep it all in one place. And I'm like, yo, let's do it. But yeah, I'm happy with the documentation because it is pretty thorough.
That's good. It's good to have thorough documentation, but it's also good to have the idiots page up at the front. The follow these steps, do exactly what it says, and then don't talk to me until after something on there messes up.
Yeah.
Ah. But no, I've had some fun at work today. Not Linux related though. So
Windows related?
No. Work related.
Oh.
Although there is some Windows related fun in there. So anyways, I guess my boss is trying to convince me that even though I have an exception to not go into the office because my daughter is immune compromised, trying to convince me to come back to the office. So they had this stupid exercise that I had to be the one to do, where I was taking screenshots of different timestamps and showing that I had access to all this stuff to show continuity between working in India and working here. Okay, fine. But how I work is I remote in using a thin client. So at home, I remote into a thin client. If I go into the office, I use my work laptop, but I use that to remote into the exact same thin client. So if I'm taking screenshots, they're going to look exactly the same. Okay, fine, but they really, really want me to do it in the office. So I go into the office, and I'm the only one there, because, you know, the rest of the team is all working from home. And I'm taking the screenshots, A couple hours in, my laptop just shuts down its network connection. And it turns out that, you know, because when I'm at home, I use my own personal laptops, that there was some security thing that updated in the background on my laptop. And because I hadn't logged in using it in 2 months, they locked it out and I have to get it re-imaged. So, and this happened towards the time, because I was supposed to come home at lunch. So this happened about lunchtime. And they're like, oh, well, in 2 hours, we can pick up the laptop from you. And then my boss is like, well, since then, you might as well go up a floor and just use the thin clients up there. After you try all this stupid crap that you already tried, restart your computer 15 times, do all these updates. And it's like, boss, they've already said that it's a security thing and I have to get it re-imaged. Well, just because they say that doesn't mean it's true.
Wait, hold on 1 second. What did you have to do with timestamps to begin with?
Okay, I had to take screenshots with timestamps showing myself using specific applications to show continuity between something that APAC was working on and what we were working on. Because it crosses time zones, just to prove that they can hand things over to us.
Oh.
It's a completely pointless exercise.
So let me get this right. So they're working on something. They have timestamps showing that they're working on this thing. Then they hand it off to you, and you had to show timestamps that you got the handoff and you were working on it when they weren't?
When they were not working on it.
Right, when they were not. And then I guess you hand it off back to them?
That one, no. It was just showing the transition from them to me and then me working on it, and that's it. The exercise ended at the half-day mark.
What? That doesn't... Wait. No, that sounds, like, pointless. Like, what is that supposed to show?
They said it showed continuity. That things can be handed from the Asia team to the American team.
But why would they think that couldn't be the case?
I don't know.
I mean, not for nothing, but you didn't get... I'm going to assume that the Asian team isn't full of dummies, right? They're not stupid. And they have skill, and you have skill, and this isn't like the first rodeo you guys have been at, correct?
Right. Well, I have my complaints about the current India team, most specifically with the with everybody quitting a few months ago and moving to other jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Basically, all but like one or two people from our India team left, and all new people came in, and there was like nobody to train them.
Okay.
But that's still no reason to be doing this particular exercise, because, you know, handing off your work is something you're doing on the very first day, and believe me, if they don't know how to do it, we're going to show them, because we want to know what we need to do for the day.
So is that whole point to make sure that they're handing off work to you guys, or that
they can hand off work?
Oh, they can. Or that they're handing off work to you and you're picking it up, and then they're not trying to do it, still trying to do it at the same time.
I don't know what the actual point of the exercise was, because, like I said, it was explained to me as it's just a continuity exercise showing that work can get handed from the one team to us.
Okay.
And my whole point on it was, yes, I can do this exercise despite the fact that it's being stupid, but there is going to be 0.0% difference between the screenshots I take at home and the screenshots I take from the office. But yeah, and now, you know, my laptop is turned in. I don't usually use my laptop anyway, but I'm going to have to start, you know, logging in at least once a month to make sure that it's updated using the laptop. And, yeah, they want me to come pick it up on Tuesday because I have Thursday, Friday, and Monday off because I worked, all last week, and then Saturday, Sunday, and then the holiday on Monday. Yeah, he wanted me to come in tomorrow for an all-hands meeting, and it's like, Tom, I need my comp time. Sorry, I shouldn't have said his name. Boss, I need my comp time.
No more comp time for you.
It's like, you know, working 12 days in a row just doesn't sound like fun to me anymore. Especially when the weekend days were both 14-hour shifts.
You know, see, here's the thing, right? Let me ask you this question. Like, in your opinion, would the company get more work out of you if they let you work from home than if they had you come into the office?
Obvious. No, it's blatantly obvious that they get more work from me if I work from home. Like, literally, with the daily traffic, it takes me an hour to get there and an hour to get back. Normally, I log in at least 30 minutes early. A lot of times, I'm having to log in an hour or so early because I'll have a 7 a.m. meeting. I am not leaving the house I could leave the house at like 6:15, 6:30 in order to make a 7 o'clock meeting at the office, you know, to log in and remote into a meeting there. But I'm not going to do that. Not and be stuck there and till 5 or 6 o'clock. And I mean, it's extremely obvious you're going to get more time of me actually working if I'm not having to commute for an hour. And it's already proven that our quality of work does not go down while we're working from home. And they want to talk about it being all about the camaraderie, but, you know, I've had multiple people join the team in the middle of everybody always working from home, and it hasn't been an issue. And I'm not the only one with an exception. So I don't know what it is about my boss wanting me to come back to the office. Well, I do to some extent. Because he might be moving on, and then I will be taking over my old position where I'm pretending to be a manager and not getting paid any more than I am now. And also doing all the stuff I already do.
And they want you in the office for that?
Probably, probably. They need me to set an example for everybody else to come into the office.
There you go. It's called being a leader, man.
Uh-huh.
You gotta love it. That stinks.
Yeah, it does. And they did put me in for a promotion, at least. And it looks like I should be getting it, but I won't know until, like, December if I'm officially getting moved from assistant vice president to vice president. You know, the thing that they've been promising me for, like, 5 years now.
Uh-huh.
And so that should be good, but you know what it doesn't come with?
A raise?
A raise. But hopefully it helps, you know, find that next job.
In the company or in a different company or either way?
Well, that'll depend on a couple of factors. If they do eventually see the writing on the wall, because I know that there are a lot of companies that are getting a lot of pushback with the come back to office stuff.
Right.
If they do see the writing on the wall and convert a bunch of these jobs to full-time remote, then I'm good with that. I'll stick around for forever. But Texas is a rough place for, you know, anybody with a vagina. And anybody with any type of learning disability or anybody that is not mainstream Christian. So I have looked at other jobs in other locations, but I'm trying to, you know, meet all the balances there, you know, pay versus what the cost of living is in the new location versus is it full-time remote? Is it something I'm actually interested in? And, you know, they seem to think that because it's full-time remote, they can just lowball the heck out of their offer, and it's like, you're getting the same work out of me. Why am I going to take that big of a pay cut just for full-time remote? I mean, it would be different if I was planning on moving to middle of nowhere, Iowa, but right. That's not going to happen. Oh, man, if I were making what I'm making, like, now in middle of nowhere, Iowa, I'd be living pretty.
Yeah, I know. That's the thing, you know. If you find a place, like, if you were to stay at your job and they would give you full-time remote and you're like, I could go anywhere in the country I want to, as long as it had decent connectivity, you could, like, and you don't really mind being out
in the middle of nowhere.
In nowhere, you know. You could get, like, huge swaths of land, whatever, right.
Or and just a savings account, you know, eventually do that thing where you
put money away,
put money away, and then, like, one day take a vacation somewhere cool, not just go chill at the house for a week.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying. I have to say, I am very thankful where I work. I enjoy my job, and they are really cool.
And I love my job. I've stuck around as long as I have. I love the actual work. I love figuring things out. I love working with the different teams. I think most of our setup is good. Yes, I have my complaints about our release process, but we're working on fixing that. Sometimes it's just, you know, some of the personnel drives me nuts, or some of the policies that are arbitrarily put into place, like return to office for no reason, bugs me a little bit. And then the location being Texas right now.
Right. Now, I can see that. I can see that. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's always and something,
then,
huh?
Yeah, and then, you know, Linux-wise, I haven't been doing much lately other than still playing around on that one GX1 Pro and figuring out what I want to 3D print next for it. And I got some Gridfinity stuff lined up to print out. I'm still using the USB hub with the 3D printed slider on the left-hand side, and I'm thinking about printing out one for the right-hand side, and that allows for USB-C pass-through. But, yeah, I mean, I need to, well, I have like 5 days off in a row, so hopefully I'm gonna do some gaming. Yeah, Thursday, Friday, Saturdays. I told you I worked Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, so I got Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday off.
Oh, this coming up. You worked over the holiday weekend when everybody else had off.
Yeah.
And now you get your holiday weekend next weekend.
I got one guy that usually does, or he specifically requested nights and weekends. So he usually covers all the weekends, and then usually we can find somebody to cover when he wants to go on vacation. But if we can't find anybody to cover, that means it automatically goes to me.
Yeah. At no extra cost.
And evidently almost no extra time off, because they didn't. I had to kind of fight to get my comp time on this one.
Did you have to do it? Can you do it in the office next time, please?
No. Yeah, that'll be the next thing. They'll want people to work weekends in the office. Well, right now they're calling it a hybrid model because they're, you know, allowing people to work 2 days from home as long as they work 3 days in the office. Right. But if you're 2 days from home or the weekend when, you know, nobody's in the office, then your other 3 days are in the office.
That sucks.
Yeah, but like I have an exception. I have two other team members that have an exception, and why are we receiving pushback? I mean, HR already signed off on this.
Does somebody not have enough to fill their day?
I guess. I mean, we fought for months to get my HR exception, and then it's like 2 weeks later, it's like, when are you coming back to the office? And it's like, what?
Yeah, the exception was only for that week.
Hopefully never. Eventually, one day, I wouldn't mind. I do like the social interaction, but as long as there is an actual valid reason for me to work from home, I'm going to continue working from home. If it ends up being a much longer term exception, I'm going to have to find a way to actually get out and socially interact with people more. Although I do want to mention that I have been talking to the guys on the distro chat or the Discord chat for the coder. And he's a YouTuber that I like to watch that does a lot of console repairs. Those guys are all like overseas, but they're really cool to hang out with and talk to, and that'll usually be on camera.
Huh.
And Jackie, my wife, wants me to mention that they were really willing to explain a lot of the overseas politics she sometimes catches on the news and how everything works there.
Oh, that's interesting. So, it's nice to have that.
Yeah, and really good conversations with those guys.
Hey,
look
you know
up the coder on YouTube.
The code, I've seen that, but I'll have to double check. You know what's interesting? You were bringing up your 3D printing stuff, and I was on a walk the other morning, and I noticed at the Maker Lab, which again, I could throw a rock from my back porch and hit it. The Maker Lab, which is completely out of my price range right now to even step through or get a membership to. They posted a little printout of their upcoming classes and stuff that they're doing. And I noticed that they took black marker and crossed certain things off. And my first thought was, you're a makerspace. Couldn't you just have printed out a new one and with that stuff removed instead of crossing it out with crazy a marker? Talk. Like, come on, man. Anyway, that kind of cracked me up, but yeah,
there's just been an insane. I've been watching Facebook Marketplace like I always do, and just an insane number of 3D printers for sale right now.
Did you think it's because a lot of people might have gotten into it with the pandemic and not having and having like a lot of time available to them, and now they're like moved on?
Maybe. That could be it. Although, why you wouldn't just set something to print on your way into the office and then, you know, hopefully it's done or half done by the time you get home.
Maybe they ran out of things to print. Like, maybe. I printed everything. What am I going to print now?
You know, I go through a month or two here or there and sometimes three or four where I just can't figure out what I want to print. So nothing gets printed. And then something else hits me. Then, you know, I spend another month or three printing stuff out.
Now, see, I know if I got into back into any one of like the role playing games that I used to like to play, a 3D printer would be awesome for printing out miniatures and stuff like that. Because
as long as you're also into painting them.
Yeah, yeah. I remember when I was growing up. Not only did I collect that, I played D&D, and I used to get the miniatures and paint them, but then there was a company that would sell molds, and my dad was big into making his own sinkers, so he had all the stuff for melting down lead. He used to go to like the mechanics and tire. Like the tire and battery places and get their cast off. Like when they used to have like the lead balancing stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. They still use them for balancing tires as far as I know.
Yeah, he used to get those, the ones that they would pull off of the cars. He used to get those from them and melt them down and make sinkers out of them. And then this company was selling molds to make your own figures. And they also had a dungeon builder thing, but it was not out of lead. You made those out of plaster, like walls and doors and floors and stuff like that. So that was a lot of fun. I could see really getting into that with 3D printing out those.
Oh, yeah, 3D printing should make that a lot easier.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not lead either.
Right?
You're not running into
a wall of hazardous fumes.
Yes. And you know what? You don't have to worry about burning your skin off either.
Yeah, there's that. Your house down.
Yeah, I think it was it the Ten Commandments? Whatever it was, the thing when I was looking, I remember watching that. And the one scene, they poured like liquid gold down this guy's throat, like into his mouth as a punishment. And I'm like,
I don't remember.
I was like, damn, every time I saw that lead, it just reminded me of that. And my dad would be like, don't get any water near that thing, because if you get water and drip that in there, it's going to explode.
Just in the first season of Game of Thrones, they poured liquid gold all over someone's head.
Either one of those would be very painful. And not something I would want to experience.
Yeah, it doesn't sound fun.
But melting things down is a little fun.
Yeah.
Torch. My dad also used to make his own bucktails. He was pretty handy with that kind of stuff. He did leather work too. Me, I can't do any of that shit. I mean, I could make my own sinkers if I wanted to, but not. I don't know if I could tie a bucktail without a lot of practice. He had it down.
I don't know either. I know I used to do a lot of woodworking when I was a kid, but there's no way I could do that stuff now.
Oh yeah, my dad did carpentry. He tied his own flies for fishing.
Well, I've got somewhere. I've got a chessboard that I made, and I got a clipboard that I made. And granted, you know, I did that at the school, and but I was still the one that did everything on it. But I had all their tools to work with. And that was still, you know, what, 25, 30 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. It's not, you know what? I can't say it's bad. I made, instead of going out and buying an entertainment center, I made one to hold the TV and the video games and stuff. And that worked well for us for at least a decade. And then my mother-in-law was like, we're going to get you a real one. Went down because she saw at a Goodwill down here when she was up one time. She saw at a Goodwill was this like huge armoire, and it had like an open space for the TV in it, and it weighed like 200 pounds, and I had to drag this thing in and set it up. And now my entertainment center is down here, and I have cooking supplies on it. Like my hibachi is in there, and my pasta maker stuff is in there, and I keep all that stuff on there. It's still serving me well. And that 200-pound entertainment center, we got so sick of it, we dragged it out to the trash a few years ago, and boom, we're done with that one. Now you know what's in place of that? It is a old dresser. Old dresser that we used to. It's got the TV on top, and the top two drawers have video games, like cartridges, the Switch games, the PlayStation games, that they're in there. The second shelf has my PlayStation 4 in it. The third and final shelf, I think, has just like controllers and stuff in it. And then next to that is a table that I used to have down here that I had stuff on. It's got two layers to it. My PlayStation 5 is on that thing. So like what used to be in my little handmade entertainment center is now.
We got our entertainment center, which is a dresser, at also at like one of the resale shops, and that was Facebook Marketplace. How much was it? $50. And it's covered in like comic books that were Batman comic books that were covered over with some kind of enamel. And it's all sealed and everything. And it's great.
It's got personality, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's got personality, and it's got the Xbox on it, and it's got one of my converted tablets as a set-top box because the screen's bad. And there's also a laptop that's hooked up to it, but I don't think we use that anymore, and it's probably going to get moved. When they need Windows, we use that one. But that thing is, like, older than my son. It's been there a while. But, it's all the drawers have, like, all the games in it. I think there's a Raspberry Pi in there that has RetroArch on it. And it's nine drawers, and it's a great thing to have instead of a regular standard entertainment center.
Is it wide or is it tall?
It's really wide. It's really wide.
I was gonna say nine drawers. I'm like, how high? So is there a TV on top of it?
Yes, there's a TV on top.
I was gonna say
it.
If it was tall, I'm like, man, you'd be straining your neck trying to watch the TV or whatever. But I got it. I see how it's wide. Yeah, that's nice. It does a great job, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Now, did you run wires in through the back of that?
No, I have not done proper cable management up through it. But all the cables do sit behind it.
So then,
we had a couple of people join and leave.
How do they run? How do you run the cable? Then
just behind
into
it.
The it's just so then it goes in through the back.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you have to drill holes to get it in?
No.
Or
like literally behind it, between the wall and the dresser.
Right.
So it's not like they're in the dresser; it's behind the dresser.
Oh, you know what? I'm thinking you might like when you said you had like the pie in one of the drawers. That's
It's not hooked up right now.
Oh, I thought you were saying it was hooked up. I was gonna. Like, yeah, mine, like that PlayStation 4 that's in that one drawer is not hooked up.
Yeah, it's
right?
not hooked
up. It's not like I did any of that stuff.
I wouldn't do that anyway. With the Pi 3, it wouldn't be so bad. But, like, with the Pi 4, you're just looking to have heat problems in a small, confined space like that.
Right.
But, yeah, I wouldn't do that. I might, like, drill it into the back of the thing and then hook it up there. That would be cool.
There you go.
Oh, that's what we were talking about.
Well, we need magnetic hinges.
Magnetic hinges. Oh, on the front, yeah. Yeah, so, some of those drawers get a little sticky in the humidity. Yeah. And so the wife is saying that I need to put hinges on them, and so instead of, like, pulling out, they pull, the front just pulls down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, there you go. Now, I was kind of talking about to my wife about this the other night. That I found it interesting. When we moved down here in 2007, I think it was, we still had a tube TV. And it was huge. And not heavy compared to other tube TVs we had in the past, but then like 2 years later we got our first flat screen TV or non-tube TV, and we still have that TV,
the tube or the non-tube,
the non-tube. So we've been using that same TV for 13 years and I use it all the time. And then the only reason why we have a second TV, which is upstairs in our room, is because my dad had it when he died, and so we just kept it. We haven't had a new TV in like 12 or 13 years now. And I'm like, you're right, it's time to upgrade. I'm like, yeah, but you know what? It works. It does the job. I have no complaints. That's not true. I have two complaints. First complaint is I wish it had more HDMI ports on it. And the second complaint is that the remote control keeps getting lost. The power button doesn't work on the remote control anymore, but the rest of it does. And if you try and adjust the volume from the TV itself, when you press the volume button, it tends to bring up the menu, and then it either brings up that menu where it starts messing with like the contrast and color or whatever, or it's like pressing the input button instead and it switches to like the cable television instead of the HDMI 1 or 2. It switches off of that.
Yeah, sounds like you just need to get a universal remote.
Well, like I said, I have a remote, but the kids keep losing it. And then I'm like, when I want to adjust the volume and I can't find the remote, then I got to either stop and dig through the whole living room trying to figure out where they may have left the remote, or I have to chance pressing the button and changing the channel instead of changing the volume.
That's why you get a Roku TV and then you just use your phone.
Well, this is mainly from when I'm playing video games and I want to adjust the volume. But yeah, we have... That's another thing. Like, our TV upstairs, we have a Roku with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that remote, I don't know what the hell... how they design that remote. It just keeps getting lost all the time. Like, yep. I will turn on something and I'll be watching it and I'll put the remote down and I haven't even moved out of bed anywhere. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, I can't find the remote.
Yeah.
Now, the remote we have right, the Roku we have right now allows us to use like the remote on the phone. You get the Roku phone app yeah. to do that?
Yeah.
We had a Roku stick before this, and it would not allow you to do that.
Oh.
And we lost the remote or something. The remote broke. I forget whatever one it was. And if you wanted to get a new remote, it was like more expensive than buying a new Roku stick, which came with a remote.
Yeah, that's terrible.
That is ridiculous.
Were the remotes interchangeable? Like if you had two
no.
of the Roku sticks?
No, because the...
they were paired?
I think it was... the stick, because the stick was in the back, it used Bluetooth, I think. And this remote now is infrared. Because if it's not pointing directly at the Roku, doesn't work. So you had to buy... That's why you couldn't
use
the phone.
Right. You should be able to use some kind of universal remote.
With the Roku?
Yeah. If it's IR, it's IR.
Oh, no. The IR one isn't a problem. Like, you could get the IR remote really cheap.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It was the Roku stick, which ran on Bluetooth. If you that's the previous one we had. If you needed to get a replacement remote, like, it was about as much as just buying a whole new Roku.
They couldn't just buy any Roku Bluetooth remote and have it work?
Well, that was the only one. You had to buy that, and then buying that remote was about as expensive as buying a new Roku stick. So it wasn't worth it.
Right.
Is what I'm saying. And then there no other remote would work with it. Whereas the Roku remotes that were the infrared, which are like just as the Roku box uses, they were cheap as shit, man. They cost like $10 or so. But that wouldn't work with the Roku stick. Needless to say, we don't have the Roku stick anymore, so.
Yeah. Sounds like a good reason not to have it. But my Roku TV has done pretty good, and when we can't find the remote because it gets up and walks away, I can just pull out the phone and use that.
How long have you had that Roku TV for now?
I think we got it before the pandemic, so 3 years.
See, my concern with buying a TV, a smart TV kind of thing, was like, how long is that going to last? Because I know
how long is it going to get updates for?
Yeah, how long are you going to be able to use it?
That functionality of it.
Yeah.
But you know, and I had those same concerns, but I thought about it, and in the end, if it quits getting updates and quits being able to get online on its own, the HDMI ports should still freaking work. And if I want to, I can hook a computer up to it and run it like I do my dumb TVs.
And yeah, and you could just, if you were really that attached to Roku or whatever, you could just slide in a Roku box in there for like $30 yeah. or whatever it is.
I'm not. I mean, it's nice that, you know, I don't have to hook something else up to it in order to get Amazon Prime or Netflix or even Plex going on it. So, and YouTube as well, although typing on it is a pain in the butt. But it's still nice to not have to hook anything else up to get those things working.
Yeah, and to be fair, my only like real experience with the smart TV was my mother-in-law bought one about 6 or 7 years ago, I think it was, maybe a little bit longer. but she thought maybe that would work better for her instead of buying all these individual products. But she lives out in the ass end of nowhere in Chester, South Carolina, and for the longest time, her internet service was satellite, and it was just terrible. So I don't know whether the problems that she had were more to do with the satellite internet service than the smart TV itself. Because it was never able, like, it had a hard time doing Netflix.
Yeah, I could see that. Where it would on such a slow connection. I mean, at that point, it's best to just get a really good home network and do a lot of downloading and use Plex.
Yeah, she wasn't going to do that. She wasn't going to do that at all. Not that level of sophistication of technology. Now, you could say, well, somebody could set all that stuff up for her. That's true. Could have.
Yeah, and then you can automate most of the downloads as long as you know what shows she likes.
Oy, oy, oy.
Not that I'm advocating torrenting, people. At all.
Yeah, because unless you're going to stream, there really isn't any other way to get it.
A lot of, yeah.
I'm trying. Nobody, there's no service that sells digital movies that's not DRM locked. Like, you can't just buy the digital copy of the movie and play it on wherever, right? It's either you buy it through like Amazon or Google and play it through YouTube or their Amazon Prime Video.
Right. And then, you know, when they lose the licensing on it, it's no longer yours because it's no longer theirs.
Well, wait, is that a problem? I mean, because honestly, I don't know. I've never had this happen, and I don't know if
been a problem for some people.
If you go on and, like, let's say you bought Star Wars off of Amazon Prime or Amazon Video for whatever, the $12 it is, $12 for the standard edition, they can lose the license to be able to sell you that? Because I never had that happen or never saw that happen, my knowledge.
You can look it up and see that it's happened to Apple on several occasions with music and movies both. Let me see if I can find an article on it.
Because that would kind of suck if you paid the X amount of dollars and then they... Like Disney used to say, own it forever on DVD or VHS. And they just didn't have the rights to sell it anymore. So even though you bought it when they did, you lost it. As opposed, now I can see if it's on their Prime streaming service and you didn't.
Okay, so last week I wrote a story based on a viral Twitter thread that showed Apple apparently openly stating that it's possible for film titles that you've bought, not just rented, on iTunes to become unavailable to you if Apple's agreement with the film studios behind those titles change. In words, Apple's customer service department was sending out documents stating that if you buy a film on iTunes, you may not be able to own it forever, the same way that you would always own a physical purchase, such as Blu-ray or 4K Blu-ray disc.
Ah, gotta love it, right?
So if you've already downloaded, they said they can't delete it, but if the licensing changes or you move countries, it may not be available for re-download.
But with something you buy off of Apple and iTunes, it's not easy to rip that out of iTunes, is it?
I don't think so. I don't know.
So even if you've downloaded it, you're dependent upon keeping that.
Your iTunes account?
Well, yeah, keeping your iTunes account and keeping that system that it's downloaded on. Because like you said, if they were lost the ability to do that, so long as you had it download, you're good. But if that system dies and you go over to another system, you're not going to be able to download it again. Yeah. Or even if you change systems, well, I guess you could transfer all the contents of the hard drive over to another system if you take care of that up front, and it should be there then, accessible on the new system. I don't know. I haven't tried to do that with Apple. I would assume
there was a big thing a couple of years ago with a bunch of people's music disappearing, even stuff that they had downloaded and was on their own system because it was attached to their iTunes account. I can't remember what all happened, but it was impossible to get all your music back. Oh, well. It doesn't really matter. Or sometimes they won't give you the exact same version that you had previously purchased, was another thing that people were complaining about.
Oh, so you go out and you want to get the original Safety Dance, but all you keep hearing is the Dance Remix version.
Right, or you got a specific live version from a specific concert, and then now all you can get is the generic version that everybody has. But that's been a couple of years, and I don't remember the story exactly.
Just don't use iTunes, right?
Problem solved. Don't use DRM. Just torrent everything. I mean, don't torrent everything.
Thank you. Oh my goodness, it's getting late.
Yeah, it is.
It's getting close. Let's get
the show going pretty good.
Oh. I still haven't looked at this laptop to figure out what's wrong with it.
Oh.
Maybe that's what's stinking the basement up.
What's it doing? Just not turning on?
Oh, yeah. It doesn't turn on at all. There's no power going to it, it looks like.
No lights? No nothing?
Nothing. Not a sound, not a light, nothing.
Have you checked the power supply yet?
I have not. I got to get out my multimeter and do all that. I haven't done anything, like I said, with it.
Always fun. Watch, it's just a power supply problem.
It could be. Ay, ay, ay. So I think I told you that I mentioned this, that my wife is back to work now. she's changing careers because she can't do massage anymore. Long story short on that, pandemic destroyed her business. She couldn't, so she had to get rid of the business, and then she had the slipped disc in the neck this past spring and had to get that fixed, and they basically said, you know, you're not gonna be able to go back to being massage therapist anymore. But she had decided that she was going to go back and get her master's degree to be able to teach English as a second language, so she just she has to get at some point she has to do like training in classrooms and stuff like that, so she could get a job as an instructional aide or a substitute teacher here because they're always looking for that stuff. So she got a job as an instructional aide. I guess
the instructional aide job will get her the teaching job once she covers X number of hours or something silly.
Well, see, here's the thing about that. The instructional aide, I'm going to say the principal, I don't know, doctor, whoever it is, basically called her into the office yesterday and said, look, you have a bachelor's degree in English. We need English teachers. I can set you up. You could have your own English. You could move to being an English teacher right now. The only thing that has to be done is you have to. You're already doing your master's program. You just have to finish a certain number of credits in 3 years to keep continuing as a teacher. So they basically said to her today again, she's like, you have your pick across the entire school district of what grade you would want to teach.
That's cool, but there's a reason they're running out of teachers.
Yeah, I know. There is a reason they're running out of teachers. She knows that. We know that. That's what she wants to do, though. And it's like, why not? Why not? Instead of, you know, if she's already doing the instructional aid thing and she's getting that down and she's like, you know, it would get me closer to finishing this master's degree, tuition reimbursement. I'm going to have to do it eventually anyhow. Might as well just start it a few years, a year earlier than I thought I would. And I'm like, money coming in now, Joe. I could get a hard drive.
There's a reason that, you know, the teachers are leaving, and part of it is that they don't get paid enough, and part of it is that treated like shit.
Yes, but the school district here is pretty good. But even if it isn't a ton of money, right, it's still better than nothing.
You know, a $30,000 a year job is still plus $30,000.
Yeah, so I think she would be starting around 50.
Yeah.
So, you know, to go from, like, when she was doing massage, she was making a decent amount of money. She was making enough to pay for her business and have, you know, we'd have extra money on the side. But she, you know, she made her own hours. And she was working like four, maybe five days a week sometimes, but not overly amount. We still had, she worked weekends and stuff like that. But to have a more consistent, steady income coming in like that again, instead of just mine, I could get that hard drive to replace this one right here soon. I could be spending money like Joel, man. Like Joel.
I don't know if you could spend money like Joel. Like rich.
One day, huh? Maybe. Living the dream. Get these kids out of the house. Woo! Yeah.
Yeah, that would cut costs greatly. Water bill goes down. Food bill goes down.
I would miss my kids, though.
I would miss mine, too.
I love having my kids in the house.
I'd come home, and I'd probably just get a sad frown on my face. Where's my kids? I miss them.
Oh, yeah. I guess we better start wrapping this up, huh?
Yeah, it's that time.
Oh man, let's see. How do I do this? Okay, there's that, and then
push the button.
All right. So you're gonna enjoy your vacation days.
I'm gonna try. I'm planning on going to Micro Center, and I think we're planning on going to Spirit. The Halloween stores that pop up around this time of year.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And I have a whole slew of Bluetooth headphones that need to let them build up for a while. And probably going to stream that on Discord. And, yeah, take naps and try and avoiding all the allergens.
Now, is that starting, like, tomorrow you're off, or is it Friday you're off?
Tomorrow. I have tomorrow off.
Excellent. Well, you enjoy your time with your family then too.
Yeah. Well, JoJo is going to love going with me to Micro Center, and I think, I'm definitely taking Jackie to Spirit, or I'll probably get stabbed, and not while I'm sleeping. Yes, I will be spending time with the family.
Well, you enjoy that, and they'll enjoy you too.
All right, you have fun too.
I will.
Too hard. I will talk to you next week.
Yep, have a good one. Here are your promos.
Oh my god, it's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
I am short.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy,
it's over. You were making it from young in the kitchen. Sushi.
I still don't know what is going on with that freaking audio.
I glitchy there again.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm beginning to wonder if it's at the system, because it's done that before. I know it's done that before.
Yeah.
Time to get some new systems in here.
So run it all off of Pies?
Well, maybe I should get that other Pi set up. Because it's not doing a damn thing with an ice cast box anymore. Like, for some reason, it just stopped working, like, accepting the audio. Ay, ay, ay. Where's the record? Alright. Close that down. Gotta stop the recording so I can put it together and then get some sleep.
Yes, sleep is important.
There we go. Something smells like it done gone rotten over here. I gotta track that smell down. I thought it was just a litter box needed cleaning, but... I hope something didn't die down here.
Sometimes if your litter box gets bad, your pets will find other places to relieve themselves.
Oh, yeah, no, it's clean, and I cleaned it out. I had a bag of cat shit that I was cleaning out. It's usually I clean it out and then throw it out. But it was like there wasn't much in there, so I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to save the bag a little bit. And Dad took care of that the other day. But something's still... I hope it's not from...
Where's Joel and Pat?
This insulation getting wet. Pat is at a Scorpions concert.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Joel has too many bad things going on this week and some commitments. So... Apparently, did you not see the email from him?
I haven't looked at that email. Let me see. Did it come out today?
Yeah, he said he wasn't going to be on.
No Joel tonight. So it's just what, me and you?
Yes.
You want me to see if I can get some other people on?
Well, it's up to you. If there's somebody else that wants to come on. Cherry Hill Tony and Murph can come on in, right?
Right? Mordency on here, too.
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. Alright. What did I do? This is 970. Isn't it? Yeah. No. Can't be 970. Or is it? Yeah, no, it would be 970. Yes, because last week was 31st. Yeah. So, and that was episode 9. Yeah, I thought for a second there, 969 was 2 weeks ago, but no. All right, let's see. Get all the this. We don't have Joel to tell us about his. What's he? Man, we used to have the bet to see what Joel would eat. We haven't done that in a while, I guess. Gosh, that was pre-pandemic stuff, wasn't it? Yeah. Man, oh man.
What was Joel talking about? Joel, like, Bogart's a lot of the show, so. Richard said he might join.
Who?
Richard?
Richard who?
No, Joel, sounds like a good evening for me to join. Richard Hughes.
Oh, boy.
Flying Rich.
What do I got here? What am I looking for? Oh, yeah. Okay. No, wait. Oh, yeah. Okay, there we go. Yeah, damn. What if, like, that terrible smell was me? I died down here a while ago. Yeah, and it's just, it's like one of those old-timey ghost stories where you just keep repeating. Like, every week I just show up to do the show, and my family has been like, they've moved on. And then one day they'll come down and see just, like, the recording stuff going. And they're like, how do episodes keep getting put out? All right.